Welcome to the Longest Stride podcast. Each week, we bring you engaging conversations with the global running community. We interview community builders and leaders and the incredible runners who inspire us all. We're by runners for runners. And now, here's your hosts, Jonathan Greenwald and Andre Morgan.
Welcome to the Longest Stride. Today's guest is great at making athletes look good. In 2013, Jay Cruz graduated from the Ontario University of Art and Design with a bachelor's degree in photography, and a year later was already shooting for a worldwide brand, Lululemon, as a resident Toronto ambassador photographer. Since then, her resume has grown to include countless other fitness and lifestyle brands. I had the pleasure of working with Jay on several occasions, and somehow she even made me look good. So thank goodness for Photoshop. I'm just kidding. Please welcome to the podcast, Jay Cruz.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Hey.
I'm kicking it. I know we all said hi before the recording start, but yeah. What's up?
Yeah. Calm the nerves.
We got to bring the energy. We got to bring the energy in this one.
This is serious energy. Like, Trey, I don't know. I don't think you've actually met Jay before, but legit energy. I just want you both to know, okay? When you're talking about photography in this episode, the two of you, I was once a photographer, so I understand aperture, depth of focus. So don't worry, I'll be okay. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's no need to go in like technical stuff because it's not visual, right?
No, it's just like
we'll be dropping like technical terms to be like bragging. No, not at all.
Yeah. We just want to
learn about Jay, you know? So again, we're running podcasts, but in reality, you do a lot in the athletic space. And our first question is always about your upbringing when it comes to sports in general, because I do know that you are an athlete yourself, regardless of for recreation or anything of the sort. So what was your introduction to athleticism when you were growing up?
Yeah, I came from a pretty athletic family. My dad was a runner, and he told me he had a lot of records in Hamilton for a long time in track and field. Whether or not that was true, I don't know. But yeah, my dad was quite the runner and long distance runner, and did the 1500 in track for quite a few years. And so he kind of was my introduction to running. But the elementary school I went to in Toronto, I'm born and raised in Toronto, and I went to Annunciation, which is a elementary school in North York, and they were like really heavy into athletics. So we, on the cross country team, we started in grade two, and they would run us like 5 days a week. Our route was pretty technical. It was very hilly, and they would do little things where they would like take the fastest runner and the second fastest runner and start you on opposite sides of the route. And then you have to try and like finish before the other runner. So it was very like intense for being in grade two and that being my first introduction into running.
Grade two.
But yeah. Yeah, I know. It's aggressive. they were really into it. But yeah, growing up, I did pretty much everything. I did volleyball, soccer, swimming, running, gymnastics, figure skating, bowling, like literally everything under the sun. But it was always running and swimming were always my strongest things that I continued to do into high school and like all into my adult life as well. So it's been a fun, fantastical journey, my friends.
Did you ever compete at like levels?
Yeah. So I competed all through elementary school and then high school, but I found like I went to offs and stuff like that all through elementary school and into beginning of high school. But I went to a theater school in high school. I went to Cardinal Carter Academy for the Arts. And unfortunately, once I feel like you enter theater school, the line is very clearly you're not in a school for sports. You're in a school for theater. So they do a very good job of kind of weeding that out of you because so much of your time is dedicated towards rehearsals and stuff like that. But it was inevitably in Cardinal Carter where I discovered photography in my grade 12th year. And that's really what made me fall into it and got me into the journey of being the photographer I am today. But it's definitely my athletic side and having that background is the reason why I always gravitated to athletes. They were always my niche. It was something I can show up on a shoot and, you know, chat with athletes and I'm really interested in what they do and I'm fascinated by them and their journey and what got them into athleticism. So I think it was just kind of a match made in heaven for me. It was like my two loves coming together into my job, and couldn't really ask for more.
Yeah. And that's such an interesting way you made that tandem, because in reality, you've done many outdoor sports and even just doing recreational stuff within school. And to turn that into photography, obviously you didn't see that trajectory, but you were like, you could have taken photos of buildings, right? And you then turn your camera onto different athletes, but you did discover it in high school at Connor Carter. But when was that aha moment? Like, hey, it should be photos of these individuals, because I'm sure you didn't have a subject matter right off the bat.
Yeah, it was tough. So I went from Cardinal Carter. I actually went to Dalhousie University for a year for theater, and then decided that photo was what I really wanted to do. And so I got accepted to the Ontario College of Art and Design, or OCAD. But it was interesting because OCAD is very fine arts based. So when I say that, I mean, like, it is not an institution by any means that, at least in my experience when I went there, my profs were so heavily against commercial photography. They were so heavily against fashion photography, you know, anything essentially like where you're getting, I don't want to say getting paid to do your job, but essentially there was this kind of weird stigma with my profs around, oh, like at that time I wanted to do fashion photography. Mm. And I literally got so much crap from my profs being like, oh, this is heartless and like you're not going to go anywhere. And it was all about like, you know, expressing yourself and creating a photo series that you put on a gallery wall and people come see and like try to understand the image on the wall. Like, no joke, that was 100% what it was like. And some profs were really nasty in my experience, were really not genuine or nice. Like, you know, I would present a series that required so much more work and effort to put into, and someone would just be like, here's an orange that I shot in my house last night, and come up with this like super, you know, deep emotional meaning behind that orange. And then they would get like a 90%, and I would have spent like 5 hours on a shoot and I would get like a 60%. So there was a very clear divide between the belief system at OCAD for me of the way that I wanted to go. I realized, took me a few years, that OCAD was definitely not the institution for me. But not to say that I didn't learn a lot about photography. It definitely allowed me the opportunity to look at photography in a different way. I probably never would have now. So I definitely did learn things from that. But after a while of attending them, I think I just kind of started to gain the respect from profs who were starting to realize how much work I was actually investing in the work I was producing. And there was a kind of a clear shift of profs that did start to really respect me and the route that I wanted to go into. And that's essentially what led me to commercial work and being in fitness, was that journey through OCAD. So
they groom photographers to be like still photography. And the goal is, we're going to teach you the nuances of photography so that essentially you can one day have your artwork in a museum.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Like, usually, let me just think this through, because like usually it's like, well, I went to university, I was trained on this, and I'm now an expert at this, I got a degree in this, and I can go into the real world. I imagine you sit in a classroom to like take a picture of an orange, and then you're like, okay, I graduated, and you're like, my resume is just pictures of oranges and fruit. Like, what?
Exactly.
How does it work? What was the intent there? What were they trying to, like, the purpose of the course?
So for them, OCAD and a lot of my profs essentially believe that like art is a form of self-expression. It's not a form of self-expression in which I get hired by a client, let's say in the commercial world, and the client is laying out to me the needs that they want. There's definitely a aspect of my own style that I'm bringing to that brand. But inevitably, it's that brand is hiring me to complete this job. Whereas at OCAD, they foresee it of, I created this series, this like deep in depth series of whatever it may be. I submit that to a gallery and people come and see the work in the gallery and decide they want to buy that because that work speaks to them. Mm-hmm. So essentially what the field I want to go into, commercial photography, was kind of seen as like selling your soul and selling your worth. It's not artistic. It's like you're creating this image because you're appealing to sell a product. And they looked at that as very shameful and like that's not what art is. That's not self-expression. That is you just wanting to sell that top, or you just wanting to sell that shoe. Like, in their eyes, there was absolutely no art put behind that, is what my experience was with my props. It was just like, oh, you're not imaginative, you're not creative, you're not doing this for you. It should all be about you. But for me, and that's kind of where I discovered that that's not at all what I enjoy in photography. Photography for me is 100% interacting with people, learning about those people, and trying to bring what's in my models and athletes out onto the image. That's kind of what I foresee my job. So it really just wasn't the right fit for me in that sense.
And that makes totally sense, because I could imagine your profs, they were trained classically, and it's then having this mold where, like, hey, you should fit this, you should be a Van Gogh, you know, and with that they weren't seeing that. So again, kudos on you for just, you know, you knew what you wanted to do regardless of what direction. But we know, look at the medium now, it's all digital, right? So if you stayed in that lane, you probably would have done product photography for our e-commerce website, because you're taking pictures of oranges. Like, that's where you would have ended up to be. And it's like, did you see the shadow on this? And they're just like, oh, I'm just going to swipe. So it would have been so short-lived without even them giving you a chance. It's just the old guards. I keep using this term, that is old guards. They've had a mindset and never evolved out of that. So they were trying to portray that on you and never even giving you a chance. Like, but there are photos in the Olympics. I just don't understand why they would still think you should retain this. Oh, we've traveled to Paris, and when they take picture of a product, it was a perfect lighting. I just can't, I don't even understand it myself, you know, but kudos on you for seeing something else.
Yeah, I think it's just making the best of your situation has always kind of been my attitude. And I definitely agree with you, Dre. I think it is that generational gap of, like, it's very easy, especially working in the artistic world, to be attached to the way things used to be and find it very hard to accept the way in which the world is now moving. And I definitely find that now for myself as a photographer, seeing iPhones and filters, and it's like, you know, what would normally take me like hours to do in Photoshop, people can just kind of like pop on a filter, and like, that's acceptable now. Like, that is okay now. And so it's very interesting to see the world we live in changing so rapidly and so dramatically, especially from a photography perspective. And now I kind of find myself in the shoes of my props of being like, oh, like, you want to hold on to, like, you know, the massive SLRs and all the lighting equipment and everything like that. But we're, the lenses, like, we're definitely, though, moving into a direction in which I think that pool of photographers between the 1%, like, apart from being the absolute top 1%, that pool is getting much smaller and smaller and smaller as, like, phones are getting better and better and better. And, you know, companies or people are just willing to accept, like, iPhone photos are okay with me now. So, yeah, it's very interesting. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're evolving, because you didn't just discount filters off the bat, but you know what, you're still being hired by commercial photography to then produce work that the software still can't do, right? Or even just the fact that you can't mimic some of these actual finished product with the iPhone, regardless of you know, how many, you know, software and filter you do put on it. And, you know, there are people that appreciate work, you know, print work, and just not digital. And we're talking about the fact that it's changing, and you know, so much so that everything is trying to get our attention, but yet it's so short-lived. So you could have been working a few hours on a photo, and 2 seconds, I like it, and move on to the next, right? It's not that you should be there looking at it like, you know, this is so great, you know, but you spent your time to make it perfect. But the last point I want to make is that I'm sure it comes off at the end result of it, because even if you did spend 3 hours on it, and the person that appreciates it know what it takes to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So well, they tried, it never worked.
I think iPhones and cameras, they definitely disrupted the industry, but they did not really impact the good photographers that have that critical eye, or that really understand how to frame subjects, or understand, like, just because I have an awesome camera doesn't mean that what I take a picture of is really awesome, right? Like, me taking a picture of a rock, you know, you take a picture of a rock, it's like, you know, great. Okay, here's the phone. Looks amazing. Drop shadow. But like when you just have that critical eye and you're able to understand how subjects work and just how the scene works, it's a totally different mm-hmm. thing. And I think that's something that, yeah, you can learn that and you can YouTube it and you can figure it out on a phone and stuff like that. But it's also, you know, maybe schools now will start teaching, I imagine, photography using a phone. But mm-hmm. I don't think that lost art is going to be lost for too long. Now, naturally, Kodak isn't really in business to make film anymore. Yeah, but and I did shoot with an AE-1 at one point. But the thing is, like, you're still going to have schools that are teaching the art of photography mm-hmm. because it is still a skill. But yeah. Real quick, so now my next thought about this is, so, you know, we're talking about OCAD and your experience there, but the reality is, Jay, like, you're a year out and you're getting picked up by Lululemon, right? So how did that happen? Did you have like your portfolio of oranges and you walked in there and you're like, check me out?
100%. I grabbed that fruit portfolio, brought it in, and Lulu was like, that's a
yeah,
match.
Yeah, let's go.
This is what
we're
want.
All about health. So let's
our go. Athletes Way are oranges.
Wow.
Yeah, I feel like my photo journey has really been like crazy. And I definitely am very humbled by it and feel very lucky. But Lulu was definitely my introduction into the industry 100% and created that stepping stone for me to work with Bauer and Saucony and a lot of other brands. But the way I actually got in with Lulu, it was so right out of school, out of university, I was like, okay, like I graduate, I have a photo degree. Like, what the hell am I going to do with that? I have no idea. I'm panicking. So I went to work as an educator at Lululemon Eaton Center. And because I had heard, like, I love the brand. I was just like, okay, like 100%. It would just be awesome to work for Lululemon. And I heard they're a great brand to work for. So I went to work for them. And I think I was working for them actually for probably like a year or 2 years at that point and really enjoyed the company. And I saw the ambassador photos in the store. And I was like, okay, like who does these photos? Like, I love them. They're awesome. And they had this one photographer who had been doing the photos for like 15 years. I think his name was Bruce. I don't remember what his last name was, but he was kind of the one who was doing them all at that time. And so I set it to kind of be a goal of mine. I'm like, I want to be the one to do these photos. So I started actually doing this email that they were kind of sending out. So Lululemon, every week, each store would send out their own product email to their specific guests that were signed up for that specific store. So we would kind of do these little in-store photo shoots of just every time new product would come in, we would grab an educator and be like, we're going to go do a yoga shoot at this studio because Lululemon partners with a lot of studios. So they would let us use the space essentially. And so that kind of became my introduction to practicing shooting fitness pretty regularly. It was every week we were doing these shoots that were going to be featured in this email going out to guests. And it's funny because I look back at those and I was like, they were like the cheesiest photos on the face of the planet. But that's what really made me realize like how to shoot athleticism, learning about the different types of athleticism. Like I was never a yogi. So like definitely learning about yoga, starting to shoot more yogis, hearing them do different poses, seeing them do different poses. And yeah, it just kind of came to the point in where my managers, Nina, Lauren, and Lindsay, at Eaton Center, they gave me the opportunity. They're like, you know what? Instead of going with Bruce, who's just like the go-to, we're going to give Jay this opportunity to do the shoot herself. And I think in that week, I actually did two shoots. I did one for Yorkdale and one for Eaton Center. And both of them went really, really well because I was just at that point, I had my eyes set on this. I was like, this is my opportunity to do the best job I could possibly do, but not even do the best job I could possibly do to copy exactly what the photographer Bruce before me had done. It's like, I need to now show how I'm going to be different. Because if I'm just going to emulate exactly what he did before me, like, why do they need me? It's like, no, we'll just keep going with him. So yeah. So I think the two shoots we did, one of them was completely ridiculous. I think it was a yogi and I really wanted it to look like he was on water. Like he was doing yoga on water. Because he was big into nature. And I was like, oh, it'd be so cool if we could somehow make it look like that. So we actually ended up shooting at the Scarborough Bluffs. And Lululemon had these two, like these wood things that they would put in their change rooms that were kind of like these little cube wood things. And we brought two of those and submerged them in water and basically put a bunch of sand on them so that they wouldn't float up. And then put Scotty, was the name of the ambassador, on these two wooden planks that were just hovering just below like the waterline. Mm-hmm. And it was really treacherous though, because obviously his outfit, we only had a certain amount of outfits for him. So if he fell off or fell out of a pose, it was like the outfit's like a goner. So it was very like, okay, like let's just try and do this as easily as possible without having, you know, a catastrophe happen. But yeah, so they both went really well. And I think that that was enough, doing yoga on water was enough to separate me from that. And so it just kind of snowballed from there. And then I had, once the other stores saw the photos, the ambassadors themselves, Scotty was amazing and actually ended up telling other ambassadors that were being onboarded, like, I did this shoot with this girl, Jay. She was really awesome. So like when you're doing your onboarding, make sure you request Jay Cruz to do your photo shoot. And so it just kind of like, definitely my whole business I owe to word of mouth. I owe to people who just had great experiences and recommended me to others. And that literally is what led to like opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. Like I would say it wasn't advertising. It wasn't always like people going through Lululemon's and seeing my photos. Like definitely a few shoots came from that. But it was a lot of people just being like, hey, I shot with this girl and it was like really fun and laid back. And like, you know, because photography is very intimidating. Photography is a very intimidating thing for 98% of people, especially this is talking pre-Instagram, you know, this is talking pre-social media going crazy and blitzing everywhere. So I think that it was just really important for me to make people feel super comfortable, no expectations, not like I'm going to ask this yogi to do this incredibly difficult pose right off the bat. It's like, no, I kind of get a sense for what they, you know, where their limits are and what they're comfortable with. And then I'll ask them to do things accordingly. But that was kind of the kicking off point. And then it's just, I ended up taking over for all of Eastern Canada for Lululemon's ambassador shoots. And then that just kind of got even bigger.
That's so dope. And I'm sure your athletic background lend to some of the inspiration and ideas that you came up with. And as you said, to stand out, you know, anyone could take a photo, but if I change the position or the location in the water floating scenario, that would just change the game. But it's vivid that you remember that particular moment to know that, okay, this is when I'm gonna set myself apart and take that risk, because it could have been where, oh, people don't actually do yoga on water, but it's the idea.
Yeah. It was really idea. Cool at the time. Yeah. And that okay, might be exactly. Something I definitely like owe to OCAD, you know, like thinking, having that training of going outside the box, that wouldn't be something that most people I think would be like, let's do yoga on water.
Yeah. I wouldn't even thought of like using one of the box from the store, you know? It's like,
is that photo, is that on Instagram, on your Instagram page, that photo?
Oh yeah, probably. It's probably way back down there, though. But
yeah. I wanna yeah. when we post this on the there. Site, I wanna use that as the one so people could see.
Yeah,
it
that was a pretty intense shoot.
And that's super awesome. Even being a amateur photographer myself, I know exactly what you mean about like everyone could just take a photo, but like, can I set myself apart from the other person that's doing it to then make your work stand out? And not be too influenced by just the typical stuff you see.
I think that that's kind of a big issue in the photography community. And I'm 100% guilty of it too, is that when you enter into the photography community and you decide you want to become a photographer, most often what people do is they see successful photographers and then they try to copy exactly what that style of that photographer. And I think being in the industry, what I've learned more and more is that really won't get you anywhere. It's like, mm-hmm. you need to develop something that's specific to you and your name and your brand that's going to separate you from everybody else. And I think that that's what's that's going to take you the longest thing to find, because as more and more people get into it, it's harder to find those images. But if you really work at it and you really do it for the love of doing it and not just doing shoots because you're like, I'm getting paid for this and that's the only time I'm going to shoot. It's so important to be doing shoots, organize them with your friends, organize them with anyone, you know, it's like, we're not in a world where you're going to get paid for every single shoot that you do. Like you're really going to find the style that you love and what you love to shoot through doing those free shoots where you have time to play and create. Cause when you're working for a client, you definitely don't have time to play around and create. It's like, you're on the job, you're being paid for that time. Like you give them what they want in that time frame.
Yeah, and then they're giving us you're giving us a behind the scenes idea of it, because everyone assumes we know what it takes to take photos, but not so much. It's like, oh, we're gonna take it Thursday and it's gonna be great, and it's like, oh, that day it's actually raining, right? I'm sure you've been in positions like that. Could you elaborate on a scenario without giving away too much that that made you had to like improvise?
Ooh, Lord, there's a lot of those situations.
It's like too early.
Oh no, it's all good. Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that I've learned is that as a photographer, you're the driver of the whole feeling and vibe of the shoot. So if you're panicking and you're showing that panic, everyone is panicking. So it's like, an example, a really good example would be when Lululemon flew me to Halifax. So like anything in client worlds, like when you're flown to do a shoot, you're flown and you have a very small window to do that shoot, because your client is paying to have you there. They're paying for your accommodations. So it's like, if it ends up raining, if, you know, everything goes the opposite way of where you want it to go, you do not have a choice at that point. Like, you are there, the client has paid for you to be there. You need to produce something for that client. So in this situation, I flew to Halifax. I think I was there for 3 days. And these two shoots we were doing for Lulu for the new Halifax store opening. And basically the setup for the brand new store was they were going to have these two massive light boxes. So light boxes are essentially where you have kind of like what looks like a giant rectangle where there's long tube lights in it. And then the photo is like a see-through screen almost that's mounted on top. So the photo is being illuminated from behind.
Dope.
So we needed to get two massive shots, like panoramics. One was of a CrossFitter, Patrick, and the other was of a yogi named Nikki. And so we knew immediately we wanted to do Nikki at Peggy's Cove. I'd been to Halifax before. I'd shot there before. I'd shot her there before. So I knew, you know, you got to go at like 4 a.m, make sure no tourists are there, anything. And Patrick was the same situation. We were going to try and get a shot of him literally out on the water, in front of the Halifax Bridge that connects the city of Halifax to Dartmouth, which is like the other side, because it's a huge Halifax staple. And I think we had the perfect sunny day. And so Patrick goes out, he's like on his kayak in the water. And I see this like massive, like storm cloud, like coming. And I'm just like, okay, like we need to get this like sunset shot, because if it's not a sunset, it's just like not going to work. So as soon as he gets in the water and paddles out, by the time he gets out there, this huge cloud comes over a block, like swallows up the entire sun. Nothing looks like, everything's just in darkness, does not look good at all. I think it was like the winds were probably like, I don't even know, like 50 kilometers per hour or something. So I'm like on this phone with the store and I'm trying to be like, okay, like this situation kind of went a little bit sideways. We're in trouble a little bit right now. So we ended up having to kind of finagle a last minute shoot the next morning at like 5:30 or 4:30 a.m. in the morning or something on Citadel Hill instead, with him running with his weighted vest because he was a CrossFitter. So it was just trying to figure out a whole other A location, B another location that was going to speak to Halifax. But C, it was like I was so packed full of shoots that literally the only time I had to do was 4:30 in the morning before I had to head to like my next shoot, which was going to be at 6:30 a.m. So it was like, you know, ride or die at that point. It's like, if the weather is not good, you know, Jay, this is on you. Like, you have to deal with it. You need to figure it out. And it ended up being great. And the weather was perfect. And the shots turned out great. And the company was very happy. So, but it's just, you know, for me, I was like, I can't show that I'm literally having like a heart attack inside over this situation. Like, I'm so sleep deprived. I'm exhausted. You know, I'm just, it's, you can't show any of that. It's like, at the end of the day, you're hired to do a job. And if you don't come through on that job, the only one that really suffers is your client. So you just got to figure it out.
Jay, how much of the idea is your idea and how much of it is the brand's? Like, do they give you like 60% creative license, 70, 80? Like,
It varies from brand to brand, to be honest. So when I shot with Bauer Hockey, we shot William Nylander. And it was very like a team of 20 people. They're like the locations Academy of Lions, went there early, scouted out the locations, mapped out shots with the team. So they were very, very technical of like exactly what they wanted. With Lululemon, I find like it's kind of been an in-between. It's more so that they had guidelines and where they were like, you know, no busy backdrops, no really bright color wardrobe. Like we really want it to be about the ambassador. And obviously when the product looked good too, but they have like little things like having a little tint of red in the images because Lululemon's color is red for the actual sign. So there's like minimal, I have a relatively amount of creative control, and some shoots like Saucony is very like, you know, where do you recommend being a resident of Toronto? Like, you know, we want something that's really true to Toronto and because you're from there, like where would you recommend? So it's really varies from client to client. I think some people really want to lean on you full force of just like you as a photographer. They know you have experience shooting in the city. They know that I've shot at a lot of yoga studios, so they can kind of tell me the look they're going for, and I can base my recommendations off of that, having that experience. But then you'll have other clients where, I mean, obviously if you're working with William Nylander, then like it's a really high budget shoot. There's the talent, you know, the whole entourage, like there's a lot of stuff that you're dealing with. So that has to be much more regimented and strict because their time is, you know, obviously is time is money.
Yeah.
So, so I see it definitely varies from brand to brand for sure.
And how have you seen the industry change so far from early day Lululemon to now? Could it be behind the scene or what you have to produce for them as an end result?
I find now the industry has changed a lot in the time that small time. I've been in it for 15 years now, and I feel like it's changed very dramatically. I would say now that we're operating in the age of Instagram, I think it used to be, you know, one photo. So for example, Lululemon's ambassador photos, like they're mounted, they're up in the store for 2 years, usually in most cases. But now we're operating in a world where most big name brands are not doing their advertising through magazines or through in-store. It's all done through social media. So now I feel like what brands are really asking for, now it's turning into a bit of a quantity over quality situation. It's about now like we need to post every day. We Six need an months. Image to post every day to be relevant, to get attention, to get engagement. And it used to be like you would go on a shoot with a high-end athlete, 3 hours of time, they get, you know, 20 images that they use to market for like the year, 2 years, 3 years, however many years they want to use the rights for. Whereas that's completely different now. Now it's like investing in high-end athletes, yeah, 100% is still a thing for like the top 1%. But I definitely find in the middle area, kind of where I'm operating, is definitely more like, we need to have a few shoots done. We need different backdrops. We need different faces. We need lots of images because the shelf life of those images is so short lived now. And that's what's really interesting and really tricky. And I think that's kind of one of the main reasons why video is definitely now starting to make a very big presence on Instagram. But that's where video and photo, it's like video, it takes so much longer to make and so much longer to produce. And it's a lot more difficult. Whereas photo, you can do a shoot and you can do a lot of different backdrops and have a lot of different people on set, and takes a lot less time to produce that. Mm-hmm. So I think that photo definitely thrives more in a social media world. My husband's a videographer. He shoots for CBC. So that's why it's like seeing kind of what he does and what I do, just seeing how the demands between us are so different. But yeah, I would definitely say now we operate in a world where brands are coming to me and more people want more images, more, you know, outfits, more time, more backdrops, because posting a photo from the same shoot almost like isn't acceptable anymore. People are like, oh, I want like a whole other look. I need to look like I'm in a whole other place so that like my page doesn't look all the same. So it's very, very interesting.
So my take on why they're pushing videos so much is the same social media platform is trying to attain your attention and keep it longer. So with the image, they've already got through that space where obviously you only spend so much time on that. And I think they've probably seen the advent of TikTok, where you could have someone's attention watching an hour of TikTok videos. Like literally you could watch an hour of TikTok videos. So maybe that's what it is. They literally want you to get addicted to it. And more so than a photo or a reel, because I think maybe that's why they're pushing video so much more now. where Instagram itself, algorithm is changing towards pushing videos more than images. And I guess that's one of the change that you've seen in industry, eh?
Yeah, for sure. I think that, video, and the same goes, exact same things that we're facing on the photography front is also being faced on the video front, of things that usually would take you like hours in Adobe Premiere to produce. Now people can just tap on their phone and do that. And so I think that it's, and the kind of like what we bring it back, we were talking about earlier, that's why I'm very happy that I personally work in an industry of photo that's all about movement. Because I think that movement is something that iPhones haven't really got to yet. We're still, like, you have burst mode on your phone, stuff like that, but actually really capturing a strong photo of a hyperactive, like a very quick movement, is something that phones haven't really mastered yet, in my opinion. So it definitely makes me feel a little bit more at ease for the longevity of my career as a photographer, for sure. But yeah, I think that, to your point, video does engage longer. But when it comes to putting together, hiring a team for video, like the cost of hiring a video team versus a photographer is much more substantial, in my opinion, based off of my experience at least. So yeah, so it's very, very interesting to see that how our world is moving. And it does definitely make me question the longevity of being a photographer and being a videographer, with how quickly people want things, like even the turnaround time too for things. Like, I'll be on shoots and I'll literally have like models on shoots taking photos on their iPhones of each other while I have like this $10,000 camera around my neck. And because they just want it instant, they just want it right away. And they want to be like, this is where I am right here, right now. Look how awesome my life is, you know? So, but it's scary, but it's just like that for me as a photographer, that just makes me have to push myself a lot harder to stay relevant.
Yeah. What's really scary, Jay, is I don't know so much, and I'm not a psychiatrist, although I do play one on Instagram. I don't know how many of that is people driving that, or if it's the companies like Instagram driving that, because back in the days, you used to go to like a website, a blog, you used to go to like Blogspot, or you go to like MySpace or whatever it was. There's only so much content on there. It's as much content as you can put in, as much time you have to create that, right? But now they have apps like an Instagram, or even when Facebook started doing this, right? Like in the beginning, it wasn't really like this, but then it's like it went bananas, where you can take a picture, boom, it's a post, and now it's in someone's feed, and now that's someone's attention. And the problem you're going to have is there's billions of people on these platforms, and how much content is coming through that makes them have to change the algorithms every time. Like even me, like an influencer, whatever, I even hate saying that, but like just like creating content, I want to spend, you know, 5 minutes on it. That, you know, sometimes that might be too long because I know that someone's going to look at that for 2.5 seconds. So how much time do I want to spend on that to think that I'm going to get 2 more likes? Like, who cares? Like at the end of the day, like you have to sometimes flip it and say, it's not about the consumer's consumer information. Now it's about me. You can't do that in your industry though, right? Because you have clients, you get paid to do it. Me, I do it for fun, right? But I think the challenge is that, you know, these applications, these tools, everyone else created that instant gratification. And now, like Dre, I mean, like, you know, Dre saw yesterday, like my kid was on the phone and he zipped through like 100 TikToks in like 2.5 minutes. And he's like, look at this.
And I'm
like,
right away.
How is your brain even consuming this information this fast?
Yeah.
Where I can't, like, I'm like trying to read the caption to figure out what they're talking about.
He's on to
and
the next
TikTok's
one.
Gone.
Yeah.
And it's on to the next one. He's already watched 3. And so I think the challenge is, yeah, I mean, you both, like the way you're describing it, I'm kind of thinking about it. It's like, this is going to get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And you're right, Dre, they probably have the reels because they're like, well, we got you. Because the other part of it is that people are going to bounce to another app, or they're going to bounce to something else that's more exciting.
If you're not there.
So Instagram and the others are like, well, we need to keep it for more than 5 seconds. So then they have reels, 15 seconds. Oh, no, that's not enough. Let's make it 30 seconds, right? So I think you're definitely onto something with that kind of instant gratification, trying to keep people like locked into and using their app. But I just don't know how it helps you. Like it's really tough.
It's not for us. Interesting enough, I'm sure you've seen this, James. Like, okay, people want to share photos, and Instagram was like, oh my God, this is a new platform. My work could get out there. And now it's almost working against the true photographers like yourself. But in a positive light, I do want to say that for a print, not that I'm nostalgic, oh yeah, I want a print kind of scenario, that's not going to be replaced. Even if you do an iPhone or any other fancy app that could actually compress three different exposure of an image, you don't even print that. So that space is still, you know, having a proper lens that give you a real bokeh compared to, you know, what they use in software. You still can't replicate that yet. And I still think there will be a way more time before they even reach to that level where you can't tell the difference, because you can tell the difference now. And there are people that still appreciate, they could tell the quality of a photo, especially if you've sharpened it for digital screens. And that alone. So in a positive light, there still be a demand for photographers with the right equipment.
I don't want to be the negative Nancy, but I guess the flip side. So the catch 22, I think, with photographers and social media is, yes, I definitely agree with you, Dre. When it comes to print will always, you'll need always a high quality camera and a certain megapixel count in order to print. But the issue that is that now I look at places like Yonge and Dundas Square, where it used to be just all billboards, is now all screens, you know? So it's like, why would I as a company pay X amount of dollars to put one image on a billboard when I can pay X amount of dollars to put five images rotating on a video screen on that billboard? So that's where I think that it actually is a scary situation from a photography standpoint, because you're like, the actual form of print, I mean, we've already seen that print is dying. We see it in magazines, like, are so much more money now to buy. Like, you try to buy a National Geographic, you're spending $20 on it now, and you're just like, why is it so expensive? And it's because they have to pay now to print all of that, and that all costs money. Whereas now everything is just being, you know, now there's digital versions for iPads of all those magazines that exist that are a fraction of the cost. Mm-hmm. So for me as a consumer, like, why am I going to spend money on a magazine that I'm just going to end up recycling mm-hmm. at the end? But on that other flip side, though, as a photographer, is that yes, definitely, like, Instagram is this like pool of images all the time, but it has given us that opportunity as photographers to put our work out there for sure. But at the same time, you have to be really careful, though, with Instagram. So Instagram actually has it written in their rights that once you post a photo to Instagram, they own that image. So an example of that would be one of the images that I had shot for Bauer Hockey of William Nylander. So I sent Bauer Hockey the ones that they had selected that they had wanted to use. And there was one that I had edited myself separately and that I had posted on my personal Instagram account of William Nylander. And I was watching a hockey game a few weeks back, and they were talking about William Nylander, and my image popped up on the screen on satellite, like, yeah, showing it. And they took it from Instagram because they have full rights to do that. But like, that's why, as much as like this tool allows us to share and put our work out there, it's like, it's creating this plethora for other brands. So if I'm, you know, Lululemon or whatever company, I can just look up hashtag Lululemon, find a bunch of really great photos that will like fit in with my page and just post those photos, you know? So it's very, very tricky. It definitely is, but you know, you just gotta like either not use the tool, like weigh the benefits and the negatives against that tool. But this is the world we live in now. We live in an age of social media, and this is how people find people. Like, even I'm finding too, even websites are becoming more and more obsolete. Like, people go to people's Instagram profiles and scroll through. So it's all about like, what does your profile look like? And is it like all white? And is it like really pleasing to look at? Like, but we're moving at a very fast pace. And so it's going to be really interesting to see where we go in 10 years and where photography and video lie and what it looks like at that time. So,
you're absolutely right.
I don't know.
It's the last time you actually type in a website and go to it. it's like, do you have like a link tree, or is there a quick button I could click on? And you're absolutely right.
Jay, we've been talking a lot about like photography and you on the other side of the lens. Now you're photographing all these really inspiring athletes and yogis, and they're doing all this really great stuff. And we know, just kind of, we talked about at the beginning of being in the episode about being, you know, athletic and stuff. You're doing a lot of stuff yourself now, right? So Do you pull inspiration from the athletes that you're photographing, or do you feel like you see what they're doing on the other side of the camera and you're like, oh, you know, I want to start doing some of that stuff too? Like, are you pulling inspiration from people you shoot?
I feel like everybody, I'm always very fascinated to hear about how people get into athleticism, because most people genuinely have a very interesting story of what made them find what they're in. And I think a lot of people don't really ask people what got them into it. But yeah, I feel like a lot of the people that I've met have had just the most fascinating stories, and that took a lot of strength for them to be where they are today. So 100%, I think that everybody I shoot, I do remember a lot of their stories. Some of them have definitely really stuck with me and that have really inspired me to do better. But at the end of the day, for sure, I think that everybody just needs to find what works for you as an athlete and what do you truly enjoy. And I think a lot of people just need to find that. But like running, for example, being the longest drive, I think I meet so many people that don't like running because they're just like, oh, I tried to run a 5K and I died, so I hate running. And I was like, yeah, but like, why? Well, A, if anybody just tried to run a 5K with zero training, yeah, you would die. Like, but like, why? I think in the running world, 5K is just kind of the accepted, like, shortest distance. So when it comes to people wanting to try something, they're just like, you know what? I'm going to start running today. I'm going to go run a 5K. You know, honestly, the biggest step for me shouldn't be I'm going to go outside and I'm going to run a 5K. It should be, can I get myself physically out my door and off my front step to get outside? And if you've done that, you pretty much already have done more than 98% of people have. So instead of having the mentality of I'm going to go run a 5K, be like, I'm going to go run. And how far do I run? Doesn't matter. Because just by having the mentality of saying I'm going to run 5K and you don't make that, you're already setting yourself up to fail on something that you haven't even begun. And running a 5K is really hard for a lot of people. So I think that it's just your perspective and how you look at things. And, you know, since I broke my leg in January, that has really given me a new perspective on running now, because running is not at all the same for me since now I have a metal rod in my leg. You know, it's the feeling, absolutely everything, the movement is completely different for me now. So it's really opened my eyes to where can I gain that same joy that I always really got from running in another form of athleticism, which is now strength. So yeah.
It does CrossFit, right? So, and then that's a slower burn and more about, it's like a different approach. It's not a 5K. It's maybe completing a wad without being out of breath. I'm not sure what that measure is like in that space. And maybe I have or haven't. I haven't seen a lot of photos of yourself. What's that like? Because being a photographer, it's like you don't get people take great photos of yourself, right? You know,
this is why I segued, right? This is why I want to talk about her being an athlete. Because I'm like, who the heck's taking your photos?
Yeah, who takes your photos? You know, you're your husband. He's like, oh, I want to do video. You're like, no, I want to do photo.
Yeah, I feel like it's funny for me because so I hate having photos of myself. I actually do. And I think the reason for that is that I literally live my life through a lens. So it's like I live my life always looking at someone through a device. So it kind of really gets under my skin. It's a little bit of a thing for me, which bring it back to the whole social media thing of when I interact with people and they're on their phone or, you know, they want me to take a picture because I'm a photographer. You know, for me, like human interaction is very important because I've been living a job and where, yeah, I'm interacting with people, but I'm always looking at them and speaking to them through a camera, basically. So it kind of creates this barrier and this wall between me and that individual. So when I'm actually interacting with people, I really enjoy to just genuinely interact with people. So that's one of the reasons why I really don't like having photos done. Like when I'm with friends, they're like, let's take a photo. Like it's just, I've just never been the person that's about that life.
Yeah. No, I get that.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be you to be the photographer, I'm sure they give you their phone and like, oh, she's a photographer. She could do it. Give her the phone. And it's like,
oh, yeah. It happens all the time.
like what are you going to do different? It's so crazy.
Yeah, I get it. And it's like, I totally understand. You know, it's like if someone got injured and I'm like, you're a nurse, do something. Like, it just kind of makes sense. It's like, you know, obviously, yeah, I know how to read light better than most people and all that jazz. So I'll give tips here and there like that. I don't really mind, but I think it's just, yeah, like it's when someone's taking a photo of me, like I'm not in the moment with them, I guess is my point. Or when I'm taking a photo of my friends, I'm not in the moment with them. I'm like looking at a device and I'm like, I don't want to be interacting with this device. I want to be interacting with you. Does that make sense? No,
it totally makes sense because that's a profession for you. So it's easy for someone to kind of dumb it down, for lack of a better term, and then it gets too close, you know. Just as I said, you know, oh, you're a doctor, you know stuff. What's going on with my leg? You know, just out of the blue, not thinking that there's more to it than an average person thinks they can do it. So they'll could treat you unprofessionally.
Yeah, totally. And I think that bridge of us as humans interacting with each other is just getting wider and wider and wider with the age of social media. So that's why I just try to make it a very like present thing, mm-hmm. that like when I go out with friends, we play this game where we all have to put our phones in the table, and in the center of the table, you stack them face down, and the first person to check their phone has to pay for the bill of everybody around the table. And wow. It's actually like really great to do, because it's like the first thing that people do now when they sit down at a dining table with people is they put their phone on the table. And it's like, why does your phone need to be on the table?
Like put it away kind of thing. Yeah.
It's an appendage. That's why.
Yeah, it really is.
I read that it's we don't like to be bored. And it's the first little instance of being bored, we'll pull our phone out. It's the elevator going downstairs. We'll pull it out. So that at any moment you're bored, you reach for your phone.
Technology did that to us. Like you used to be able to ride in an elevator and like watch the numbers go down and stuff like that. Now it's like they put TVs in elevators 10 years ago. And then now it's like you have your phone. And because yeah, it's like, it's just like technology is doing that. It's just like you can consume so much information in a nanosecond that why would you feel like you, and then part of it's the technology. Then part of it's like, you feel like you're missing out on something if you're not consumed in the information, because it's like, hold on, something happened 3 minutes ago. While I was on the elevator, something literally happened in the world, and I'm the 1.2 millionth person to find out. How is that possible, right? Like, why did it take so long? So, yeah, it's unfortunate. That's just, yeah.
I do want to make a point about technology working for us. So I discovered recently through a documentary, and it has to do with photography. I think I saw this on Vox or something of the sort. It spoke about Kodak back in the day when they had a color card and they would actually try to match what skin tone would have been in photography. And interestingly enough, it wouldn't be able to determine when we're taking photo with someone darker and lighter in the same photo, it would just make the other person just super dark because it can't actually measure for that. And so they had a card that they use as a litmus things like this is the card that, you know, skin tones are. And what changed was the people that were selling catalogs of furniture, you couldn't tell the different type of wood. So now they had to develop different shades of brown, literally, in order to make it that camera sensor can determine the different color. And I thought that was interesting. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to tell you that was a thing. I'm sure it's got better now. Even Google said that they're working with their software so that you can recognize facial recognition and the fact that you have darker skin and a test for that. And I'm sure you've shot people, not just the lighting, but different skin tones in the same shoot. And then you have to compensate for that after the fact.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that that's something a lot of people don't, yeah, and like one thing about is that, you know, lighter skin types reflect light and darker skin types absorb light. So it's like, it's a very different way that different skin tones interact with light. So yeah, that is like, we even have different color like reflectors. Like you wouldn't use a white reflector on a black person because it would just cause like a white glare on them and they'd look super washed out and like weird. It's like you would use more of a gold tone so that it warms the skin more. So it's all very just creating that understanding and all things that like as a photographer you do need to know on how light works and working with different skin tones, because it is, yeah, I've had that 100 times when I've had people of all different skin tones in the same image and being able to balance and light appropriately for that.
That's so nuts that you still have to do that, you know. So what what's next for Jay?
Ooh, well, I'm currently training to be a firefighter right
that's
now.
That's so badass. That's like my, yes. That's my dream job. No one asked me what my password is. I know, right? Thanks for everything.
Yeah, it's
that's
crazy.
Amazing, Jay.
That's so badass.
Yeah, I love it. It's something I've always wanted to do. It's not like, you know, I was just randomly like, I think I'm going to be a firefighter today. I've always been I love to help people, and I've always been fascinated in fire. And with photo, I've never had the time. And that's why, like, COVID has kind of been that blessing in disguise for me to take that step back and be like, okay, now I have the time to really look at myself and reflect of where I want to be. And becoming a firefighter has always been on my list. It's been put off and put off and put off. And COVID's given me that time to train, because it's a lot of training, and studying, and just, and it's been absolutely amazing to be in training, and has really taught me so much, and many things that can apply 100% to my photography career, because I'm definitely not giving that up. I still plan to do photo and be a firefighter simultaneously. So it'll be busy, but you know, that's, I like so to be dope. Busy.
Do you know firefighters?
Oh yes, I know quite a few.
It's like I've always
I know someone that went through this journey. Yeah, I know someone that went through this journey. She's extraordinary, and she went through the same journey. Like, it might have been later on, right? Like, she had a career, everything, and then went through this journey, and she's fantastic. I would even connect to you if you didn't have a circle already. But yeah, no, that's amazing. So I know you mentioned kind of COVID and stuff like that. Was it having the foresight to know that, like, the industry is changing, so maybe I need a plan B? Or are you saying, I don't care what happens with the industry, I still want to actually make this kind of move?
I think it's, like, to be honest, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that it is 100%. I do see the industry of photography changing a lot. And I will always do photography, paid or unpaid. I absolutely love to do it. And I don't think that love will ever go away. But I definitely think fire, I'm so fascinated in fire. It requires a very strong mind to go through.
Yeah.
So for, like, example, like, I'm doing my emergency medical responder training right now. And, you know, we're trained on how to deal with crime scenes. We're trained on how to deal with rape victims. We're trained to deal with all these things that you're going to be exposed to regularly. Child abuse, you know, like, lots of stuff that most people would have a very hard time coming face to face with. And
right.
I believe that, like, you don't really know how you'll react to those things until you're faced with them. I think it's 100% an experience thing you have to go through. But I've always loved to help people, and just going through my EMR, like, literally, I already have used those skills. I was in the beaches walking with a friend of mine, and we had dinner like a few weeks ago, and this kid just collapsed, fell backwards off a curve, and smashed his head on the pavement. And I was able to, like, use all the skills I've been learning, and it was, like, amazing to just be calm and know what to do. And you know, everybody else around me was, like, panicking, and I just felt like that was, like, my first kind of test of being like, is this what I should be doing with my life? And in that moment, I definitely was like, this just solidified to me that, like, this is what I should be doing and what I want to do. So it was very, very interesting, and it's just a new chapter I'm doing, and, you know, we'll see where I end up.
No, good luck with that.
Wow, seriously, I can't wait to see the photos. Oh
my God.
not as a bad stuff, but just like it's so, like, extraordinary. Like, I know it's like everything that okay, so I know it's like, it's obviously a horrible thing, fire, right? I mean, just like the damage you could do, but just like the photography.
No, it's the first gosh, no, you sound like you want a calendar. Calm down.
No, I don't hang out. I didn't say of the firefighters. Okay. I meant of the fire.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, Jay, like, with a Dalmatian.
She'd be busy. No, she'd be busy.
I mean, like, you could see, like, a dark room and just, like,
But think,
like,
about
that would be
insane. In reality, with beautiful imagery, and you bring that to the space, it could inspire others to want to take on a profession. So it might be shedding some light on that space, pun intended. But yeah, so first responder stuff is no joke. So kudos on you for wanting to step into that space.
Yeah,
it's very, if you want to see photos like that, there's actually a Toronto photographer, his Instagram handle is Living by YYZ, and he's actually, like, the official Toronto photographer for fire emergency services, and everything he posts is literally daily, like incidences as they're happening, like car accidents, truck rollovers, fires happening. Nice. And like, he literally just arrives on scene to document it. It's very, very fascinating. Just like knowing what's going on in our city, mm-hmm. and just seeing, having first responders be recognized for their work. Yeah. 'Cause I think that that's incredibly important as well. So
Kyle Taylor. Oh my God. I just did a quick scan and it's, it looks pretty wild. Yeah. Hey,
oh, the Air Force has a photographer the U.S. Air Force. I was like, they paid this person.
Everyone
has.
Yeah. Everyone. You have to document all this stuff, makes sense. Right?
Like, yeah. So that type of
that's
stuff.
Amazing. We learned so much, Shay. Like, seriously, like just like your evolution and like coming through this. And yeah, it's surprising to hear the firefighting stuff. I wish you so much luck. That is so extraordinary. And like, that's really awesome. But like, hey, learned so much about, you know, the space. And yeah, thanks for having this conversation and telling us about what's going on in the world. And I thought it was going to be a great conversation because, you know, Dre's a photographer and
you're a photographer, Dre. Don't even lie.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah,
I still show the bad ones.
super inspiring and I just love it all. So thank you for joining us. It was really cool.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. It was fun.
Your first podcast. Let's go.
I know.
We're gonna get you back when you actually go through, I don't even know what it's called, basic training. I don't even know what it is called. But when you're like
pre-service or NFA.
Like when you're running with the fire hoses and you're thank God I did those 400 repeats. Thank God I did those mile repeats.
That's awesome.
Thank God I did that podcast.
Yeah, no, right?
No. But we wanna hear how that's going.
Yeah, hopefully they give away too much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks so much, guys.
And with that being said, this is the Longest Ride podcast. Peace.